So I recorded this at 6 a.m. after many hours of insomnia, but while managing to save it, I actually ended up deleting it. So this is take two. I have learned something about this app, and how it works, which is good, but... okay, so this story is an AU of, Stargate Atlantis with the Star Wars prequels characters. So, where we start is Australia. And we start there because of the clones. So, in this Earth society, they have figured out cloning like the Kaminoans have, although the Kaminoans don't exist in this universe. They figured out cloning, and so clones are made, and then they are not all, used for war, and that is the thing, is that they are seen as tools rather than people, and seen as lesser than bioborn people. The clones are in widespread use across Earth. And for the purposes of this fic, the main language in Australia is Mandoa. And the Mandalorian culture is less the Australian culture and more the culture of the clones in how they were trained and grew up. The clones are primarily working in the military of various world governments, and but they're also often employed in other lines of work as well, where, you know, manual labor is needed and that kind of thing. But there also is another side to that, where some clones are brought into academia and sciences and that kind of thing. And the Stargate program is explicitly doing that and is taking a bunch of clones and putting them through college and trying to, like, produce more scientists who hopefully can help them figure out the mysteries of the gate and the universe. So that's kind of where we start. Now, when they are trying to find their way to Atlantis, the SGC is hesitant to send that many of their bioborn scientists because of that, like, social divide. And because Atlantis could be a one-way trip, they don't want to lose a, like, large number of their most brilliant scientists. They kind of do, but they're... many of them are clones, and so it's seen as a lesser loss that they are replaceable. There are only two Bioborns who go to Atlantis, and those are Anakin Skywalker and Obi-Wan Kenobi. So Obi-Wan is kind of our Elizabeth Weir. He is, like, a civilian diplomat, anthropologist, kind of. He does have combat training and actually is, specifically, like, an expert swordsman. I don't know when he found time to do this, but he did. Relevant later for lightsabers. He is the leader of the expedition. Anakin is a lead scientist, and he's kind of our Rodney, and he's also in some ways a John, because he has a strong expression of the ATA gene, and he is able to activate the ancient technology. So, some background on Anakin. Shmi is a migrant farm worker who is raising Anakin. There's still no father in the picture, although it's not an immaculate conception this time. Anakin grows up very poor, but Shmi really tries to encourage him in school, and Anakin is very smart. He's, you know, kind of a hyperactive kid and sometimes has trouble focusing, but he is really brilliant. And so she encourages him all through, like, all through his schooling, and then he's able to get scholarships for college. And part of how he does that is he joins the Air Force. Because one of the things that Anakin is most interested in is flying. Anakin, like, is going through college, also serves some time in a war, and also gets, like, master's and PhDs. And so he is primarily studying, like, theoretical physics and also, like, engineering. Because basically, Anakin wants to build a spaceship. Or he wants to develop the technology so that you can, like, fly in space, in the way you can fly in atmosphere. He could have gone the route of, like, an astronaut, but, like, the way that is primarily working right now is, like, rockets, and that's less what he wanted to do. He wanted to be controlling things. So Anakin is studying, like, engineering and theoretical physics, kind of with the idea that he wants to, like, build space travel, if he can figure it out. So he gets recruited by the Stargate program, and ends up going on this mission. He and Obi-Wan film goodbye messages for their family. I mean, I don't know how, like, connected to a family Obi-Wan is. I think he's still, in this case, an orphan. But, you know, like, probably has some mentors that he might have, like, left a video for. But he's also kind of a loner. And so they both have to record goodbye messages in case they don't make it back. And so then they go through the gate, and Anakin has a very strong expression of the ATA gene, and he lights up Atlantis just like John does, and Atlantis really likes Anakin. And so they have a lot of the same problems that the original Atlantis expedition had. Like, they are underwater. There's no time travel to fix that problem. The Atlanteans had already installed, a, like, failsafe on that one. They then begin exploring Atlantis, and exploring the Pegasus Galaxy. And, they stumble into the Ethosians and, like, learn about the Wraith. And, you know, awaken the Wraith, because that's always a great thing to do. And so they meet the Ethosians, and they meet Tayla, and the Ethosians end up, evacuating to the planet that Atlantis is on, which I'm going to call Lantia. Kind of the AR team, like the expedition team, first expedition team is founded, and it has, Anakin. Rodney is not here, neither is John. And so it has Anakin, Obi-Wan, Rex, and then kind of, like, Tayla is the fourth member. It'll change a little bit over time. And so, like, now that I'm thinking about it, having literally your entire command staff on the first expedition team is maybe a bad idea, but it's Anakin and Obi-Wan, so, you know. And Rex is head of the military, contingent. So they then go and have a lot of the same adventures that the original Atlantis expedition has. And at one point, they gate to a planet called Naboo. And what is happening on Naboo is that relatively recently, a lot of people on Naboo have been getting very seriously ill and dying. And Padme is kind of part of the lead government. They're like trying, their scientists and like doctors are trying to figure out what is causing this, how to heal it, and they're not really having much success. But then our gate team comes through and meets them and learns about this, and then have Kix come through and see if he can work and maybe find a solution. He's able to find a solution. Kix figures out that there's been a shift in the environment of this planet that is causing a lot of viruses, bacteria. Like, it's kind of like the Blue Shadow virus, except for it's slower acting and less concentrated. So Kix figures out that what's causing it and, you know, is able to develop a cure. But all of the people of Naboo need to be evacuated off Atlantis, or off Naboo. Tayla is already kind of thinking during that mission that she wants if the Naboo want, they can, like, join them on Lantia and, you know, be refugees together. But she wants to go talk to her people and, like, talk to Padme and, like, figure out if that's what people want. It is. Anakin, of course, falls in love with Padme at first sight. He's a little less creepy in this universe. He's a little bit more well-adjusted, and so he's terrible at flirting, but not, like, on the creepy end. He just is bad at it. But Padme likes his bad flirting. Anakin, like, immediately falls in love with Padme, and then, like, Padme ends up being the fourth on their AR team, and the first time he sees her fight, he's just like, oh no, oh no, I'm even more in love with her now. They start a relationship. I'm not very good at relationships, so I can't really, like, not pick that end of it, but we'll get to it, and there's gonna be an OT3. All about the poly. Also, Padme has a blaster, which Anakin also loves. And Padme lets him take apart her blaster and figure out how it works. The expedition does run into Ronan, as a runner, and do manage to, like, bring him into Atlantis. I think one of the clones is probably his anchor, more or less. He's on another AR team, possibly the one headed by Cody. I, like, don't know all of the clones, but he connects with, like, someone on Atlantis that makes him want to stay, because, you know, Ronan isn't really, like, in for the cause of defeating the Wraith. Like, he wants to kill some Wraith, but, like, this whole Atlantean expedition is, like, not exactly his jam, but, like, he wants to watch the back of this person who he trusts a lot. I think whoever this is, let's make it Hard Case. I don't know his personality, so I don't know if that really matches, but, He is on the original expedition that with Kix, that finds the runner, like, and so that is how Ronan comes to be in Atlantis. But Ronan would not let Anakin touch his blaster. He's just like, no. Anakin's really happy when he gets to take apart Padme's blaster. They also run into Ahsoka. So Ahsoka is a runner. She's been a runner since she was about 14. and is now about 17. And comes across the expedition, and they help her get the tracker out and bring her back to Atlantis. And she really bonds with Anakin and decides to stay as well. And so she joins, she becomes a fifth on, Anakin's AR team. So that is how Ahsoka is here, because she's wonderful. So Anakin's specialty is taking things apart and putting them back together and understanding how they work and being able to replicate them. So he does this with the blasters. He does this with the shield generators. I don't think he does that, like, all that early. Like, that's probably, like, at least 4 years in when they're, like, starting to, like, have a large refugee population and are trying to figure out how to protect them. But, yeah, Anakin is doing a lot of taking things apart and putting them together. One of the things he takes apart and puts together is a lightsaber. He manages to find... Someone manages to find a lightsaber, and they turn it on and do not get injured, because let's just not. So Anakin takes it apart and figures out that there's a kyber crystal in it, but, like, doesn't know how he can replicate that. So now, who comes in is who would have been originally droid bait, who I don't really know his personality either, because he dies in the first episode, but in this universe, there aren't any droids to be bait for. So his name ends up being Target. And so Target is, like, a excellent linguist. He knows English, American Sign Language, Mandoa. He learns the Athosian hand sign language, and all the clones actually learn ASL, or it might be kind of a Mandoa variant. Like, there's kind of some dialect kind of things of both, like, traditional American sign and Mandoa sign. And so as they, you know, are integrating with the people of Pegasus and the Athosians and the Naboo, there is kind of this amalgamation of all of these signs as people are trying to learn how to communicate with one another, because, like, while the gate translators translate verbal language, it doesn't translate sign language. This collective sign language ends up becoming called Pegasus Nonverbal. And this is not my idea. This is from the story, Pegasus Nonverbal. I forget who wrote it at the moment. But it's a wonderful, wonderful story that I have read many times and I love. That's another one of the languages that Target knows. He also teaches himself to read ancient and also speak it, and which the Athosians and can help with, and, like, Ronin and every, like, all of the Pegasus natives, because kind of the Pegasus, like, universal language is, like, it's not, like, the, like, ancestors, ancients, ancient language. It's, like, evolved over time. So it's a little bit different, but, So the Atlantis expedition eventually will learn how to speak ancient to better communicate with people. Like, there is gate translation, but I don't really know how I want this to work, because, like, technically I think the gates should have been translating for everyone, like, since forever. But I just really like the ideas of linguistic exchange and working together in that way. So, maybe the gate translation doesn't always work. IDK. Yeah, so Target teaches himself ancient and then is able to, like, teach the Atlantis expedition ancient, and also is figuring out, like, the Wraith written and spoken language, although he isn't really able to speak it because the Wraith language. Yeah, and so kind of one of the things that Target does is he, you know, helps translate and analyze the ancient database. And from that, they're able to get information about the Kyber crystals and where they can find them. So Anakin obviously goes on an expedition and shenanigans probably happen, but they're able to get some Kyber crystals and bring them back to Atlantis, and Anakin builds some lightsabers. The note in my Audacity file just says, ad lib loss. So Anakin does end up, like, as they're looking for the Kyber crystals, one of the, like, adventures that happens on this land is that, like, the basically part of the mine collapses. And so Anakin's arm gets stuck underneath, like, a large rock and, like, that is not movable. And even if it was movable, like, his arm would be, like, too mangled to save. And so they, like, he has his lightsaber, and so he's able to, like, cut off his own arm and cauterize the wound. But, like, the rest of the team kind of has to rescue him because he pretty much passes out after that. And so they get him back to Atlantis. And the thing is that they did not bring any supplies to, like, build a cybernetic arm. But, like, Anakin, being, like, the engineer and builder that he is just like, well, it can't be that hard. He like, needs, like, a significant amount of help in many ways. Like, he, like, talks a lot with Kix, and Kix helps design, like, the, like, neuro interface that will, like, allow him to move the fingers and have sensation and all of that. And with one hand, Anakin can't super effectively build the lightsaber. Well, that's also true, but not the priority. He can't build his arm. And, like, Anakin being Anakin, like, even after he gets it done, like, he keeps, like, modding it and, like, keeping things hidden in his arm, which, like, is very handy for missions. Like, he has a, like, spare comm and, like, a GPS tracker in his arm. Like, he has, like, basically what would be, like, a mini lightsaber, like a vibroblade. And yeah. So he uses that to just be a badass and, like, rescue his friends and himself. Yeah. So this is where Obi-Wan's, like, sword fighting, expertise comes in handy. So, now they have lightsabers and they can use them, but, like, most of them are not trained in this kind of combat. But Anakin really likes the lightsaber. And also Ahsoka, some of the clones, start to learn how to use a lightsaber. And so, I mean, Obi-Wan is learning along with them, but he is teaching them traditional, like, sword fighting techniques, which I don't know any. But probably a variety of styles, because that seems like Obi-Wan. And so Ahsoka still stubbornly uses the reverse grip and the Shoto blade. But, like, there isn't anyone specifically really to teach her that. Like, Obi-Wan has some knowledge of that, but not fully. So Ahsoka just kind of, like, outstubborns everyone and figures it out herself. Because she is awesome. And so that is how we come to have lightsabers. Another thing about Ahsoka is one of the, like, talents of her species is telekinesis. Like, this is kind of the closest I have to the Force in this story. But she is able to, she's like one of the best, like lightsaber users, partially because of her, dual, lightsabers, and also because she's able to use, telekinesis to do, like, pull her sword to her, like, do fancy, like, drops and, you know, things like in the Kylo and Rey fight the Praetorian Guard, battle. So that is the lightsabers, and lightsabers actually are incredibly effective against the Wraith. You know, you cut off a Wraith's head or arm or leg, and they're kind of screwed. I mean, it's a very dangerous way to fight a Wraith because you're in close quarters combat, and they definitely... The Atlantis expedition starts to wear a lot of leather, leather clothing and leather, like, essentially armor, because, like, having no, like, leather, like, is much more of a barrier than cloth, in stopping the Wraith from, like, being able to suck your life from you. There's still a lot of fighting Wraith in with ranged weapons, because that is, in many ways, the smart thing to do. But Ahsoka is able to do a lot of, like, long-range lightsaber, like, decapitating and dismembering, and is a total badass. I love her so much. Oh my god. And so... The Atlantis Expedition is building a lot of resources and community. There's, you know, a lot of refugees, on the continent, and they're growing a lot of their own food. Like, botanists were a very, very important aspect of this expedition, and they did, like, bring seeds and things like that, which I don't think they were really great about in the original show. And so they're raising native livestock, and so it's kind of a partnership between the botanist clones and, like, the Ethosians and Naboo and people who have been farming in Pegasus for thousands of years, and like the clones kind of bringing an Earth perspective, and, like, because they do know how to grow things, and this environment isn't drastically different, but, like, the Pegasus natives obviously have greater knowledge of how to grow in this environment. And so, like, they have, like, a thriving society, kind of. They are doing a lot of trade deals with, various other societies in the Pegasus Galaxy, and they're doing fairly well. Meanwhile, one of the things that Anakin has been working on is spaceships. So they have the gate ships, which, I've decided, because I do still really like the name of Puddle Jumpers, that the expedition calls them, gate ships for a while. And then when they get Ahsoka, Anakin at some point, like, I feel like this is also, like, how she gets her nickname of Snips, is that she's on an expedition with Anakin, and he's flying, and I guess, like, the Wraith are shooting at them, and manage to shoot them down over, like, a lake or an ocean, and, like, the gate ship just kind of, like, puddle jumps. And Ahsoka is yelling at Anakin, because, like, get your shit together, like, we are not dying on this spaceship. And Anakin, of course, does the, like, don't get snippy with me, Snips, thing. And so, yeah, that's how both we have Puddle Jumpers and Snips, and her calling him Sky Guy. Yeah, Anakin and Ahsoka have, a really close, like, mentorship relationship. There's a larger age gap than there is in the show, because Anakin is probably, like, in his 30s, or late 20s at the earliest, just like based on the amount of time it would need, he would need to do the education that he has. And Ahsoka is like 17. But they still have a very close, like, mentor, brother-sister kind of relationship. So they have the gate ships, but they're also needing to battle, like, Wraith hives. And that shit's hard. And so they end up, and many of the clones are from the Air Force, so they are naturally pilots. And Anakin manages to build X-Wings. That's how that happens. And so he figures out how to build a spaceship that flies around and you can dart around in. I think the X-Wings actually have a fair amount of, like, mind tech interface. And that's part of how they're flown. Like, there's still, like, mechanical things as well. But just to give them a little bit of an edge. And so, you know, they have, like, a bunch of X-Wings and are teaching, like, the clones are also training some of the, like, Lantian refugees in how to fly if they want to. Because, you know, they're, like, the Lantian society has enough infrastructure now to kind of really be fighting against the Wraith. Like, they're running lower on, like, their Earth supplies of weapons and that kind of thing, but they're able to, you know, build blasters and, you know, kind of, like, reforge some stuff. And so they're, like, shifting a lot more to, like, Pegasus weapons. And so we have X-Wings and we have puddle jumpers, and as they're fighting the Wraith Hives, you know, Anakin is like, okay, I've built some small spaceships. What if I build the big one? And so he starts working on that. Another side project that he has is figuring out how to recharge the ZPMs. And, okay, one thing about this, like, storyline I should mention is many, many things come from the wonderful SGA fic Decade, which is a story about how the SGA team, Atlantis expedition, go off to Pegasus and then never are able to, reestablish contact with Earth. So they're alone in the Pegasus galaxy and have to figure out their shit. And they do. And, you know, 10 years down the line, they have built their own, like, spaceship with a hyperdrive and have been fighting the Wraith for a while. And then the Wraith Hives learn about Earth, and they have to come back to Earth to help defend it. And the thing that I love about that fic is kind of the tension between the expedition and the SGC. So we're going to kind of follow that arc. So another thing that has been happening kind of over the years is that Kix does the, like, experimentation on Wraith DNA and, like, Michael. It doesn't go bad, because I don't really want to, like, get into the whole Michael thing. But this means that they have the ability to transform Wraith into more or less humans. They're, it basically takes away their need to feed and drastically shortens their lifespan, but also means they don't have to feed and kill all the humans. And can get energy from food. And another thing that Kix works on, because he does a lot of, I don't know if I mentioned at the beginning, but Kix does do the gene therapy for the ATA gene. So most of the clones that takes on in Obi-Wan, but there's, like, variation in strength of expression. So some people, it works better or more easily. So Kix has worked a lot with, like, genes and DNA and, like, that kind of, like, molecular biology, genealogy. Sorry, I can't talk. I still haven't really slept. And so he also starts tackling the problem of the clones' accelerated aging. And he starts doing this at the point where the first clone dies of old age, and Obi-Wan didn't really know about this aspect of the clones. Like, Obi-Wan and Anakin are pretty good about treating the clones as equals. Anakin growing up, like, poor and kind of, like, dealing with that kind of oppression and discrimination, like, really, you know, it's not the same situation, because, like, Anakin is always granted his humanity, which is not really true of the clones, but he is able to empathize and, you know, goes out of his way to make sure to, like, not let the clones feel like they are inferior, in any way. And Obi-Wan just, like, he's an anthropologist and just, like, kind of a good person, so he also isn't a dick about it. But, you know, there's still a lot of, you know, like, the clones have been raised with that prejudice and have experienced it all of their lives, so it's kind of like this internalized oppression as well. So when the first clone dies, like, Obi-Wan is asking Kix, like, can you, like, cure this illness, this, you know, deterioration of, like, one of our expedition members? And Kix is just kind of like, I don't think I can solve this problem, really. And then, like, explains to Obi-Wan, like, how clone accelerated aging works and, like, the way they, like, their entire biology breaks down. And so, like, Obi-Wan is like, could you fix it? Could you fix it with a gene therapy? And, Kix is like, or before that part, Kix is just like, you know, and, like, one of the problems is that, like, we're all gonna start dying, all of the clones. Like, most of the clones are on, like, the younger, like, we're on the younger side at the beginning of the expedition, you know, just in their 20s, or, like, their early 20s, but, like, as the years go on, they are going to die, and Kix is explaining that, and, like, the way he explains it is very much, like, is, like, we as resources and tools are going to disappear, and Obi-Wan is, like, can you come up with, like, another gene therapy? Can you fix this? And, you know, Kix is just kind of like, yes, I will try and do that. I will try and make sure your tools don't go away. He doesn't use quite those words, but, like, Obi-Wan is picking up the, like, connotations. And Obi-Wan's like, no, I don't want you to do this because, like, I need the clones to do jobs. Like, I want you to do this because I care about you as people, and I don't want you dying for no reason. And so that's, like, kind of a good interaction for them. So the clones all do get the gene therapy, and now their aging is kind of back to human standard for the rest of their lives. Meanwhile, in Atlantis, the Atlanteans, which is kind of the term for both the Atlantis expedition and the refugees that are on the continent, all start, like, with the, like, technology and infrastructure that they have, they can, like, be beating back the Wraith. And so there is, there are many less Wraith in the galaxy, and their danger is a lot less, because they're starving and that kind of thing. As a part of this confederacy of the Atlanteans, one of the founding principles is that, like, all Wraith need to be offered the conversion therapy before they're, like, attacked and destroyed. Primarily when, like, the Lantians are attacking directly. I'm sure they would also offer it in a battle where the Wraith came to them. But, you know. And that's another thing from Decade. So, now we're at the point where they have a decent-sized spaceship, and Anakin is trying to work on hyperdrive. You know, he knows the theoretical physics is there, and so he's trying to figure out how to build it. Only, while he's trying to figure that one out, I think I mentioned before that he figures out how to recharge the ZPMs. That's important. So they have a spaceship, but at the same time, they learn that, like, a hive of Wraith, or, like, a couple of hives, I forget what the many hives are called, a colony of Wraith, find out about Earth, and that there's this, like, wonderful feeding ground just waiting for the taking. And they also figure out hyperdrives around that time, and so the Lantians find out these Wraith are on their way to Earth, and they're like, oh shit. I mean, they go back to fight the Wraith, and the reason that they do that is a little bit that, like, they don't want their homeworld destroyed, but it's also primarily a, like, seen as, like, being a Pegasus problem of, if the Wraith go to Earth and feed and become strong, we will have that much more difficulty being able to defeat them and create a safe galaxy for ourselves. And so there's a lot of, like, that's kind of a strategic move rather than, like, a sentimental one. And so Anakin has to install the hyperdrive while they're flying to Earth. And because they have charged ZPMs, they are able to finally open a wormhole to the SGC. They've been able to do this for a few years, but they just kind of never took the time. There were emergencies. They'd been, like, on their own for 10 years. Like, all of the Atlanteans at some point take a vote as far as whether they want to reintegrate with Earth. And, like, how much they want to do that. Like, many of them want to reestablish contact, like, for resources and family and that kind of thing. But they all unanimously vote that, like, they want to stay in Pegasus, and if the SGC isn't, like, cool with that, like, they want to secede. And so, like, that's kind of the dynamic that we have going into this battle. But they're now able to dial the SGC, so they're able to give the SGC advance warning before the Wraith hives show up. And so Obi-Wan helps brief them on, like, what the danger is. There isn't a lot of time to kind of talk. Like, it's mainly battle planning. And so, like, Jack O'Neill is kind of picking up this vibe of, like, the Atlanteans feel like, you know, Pegasus natives now, and, like, don't really want to go back into the fold. But, like, the SGC in general isn't fully picking up that vibe yet. But after the battle, or the initial battle, they're, you know, kind of regrouping and trying to start a debrief. Only while they're doing that, another 7 hives show up. Well, they don't show up, but, like, their ship, which I think is called the Reliant, I'm always really bad at remembering what Anakin's, like, battle cruiser is called. But we're gonna call it the Reliant for now. So the Reliant picks up a signal that there are 7 Wraith hives on their way to Earth. And so now there is an even more intense mad scramble, because the first battle was incredibly easy, and, like, for what it was. And honestly, the Reliant could have, like, handle it on its own. A little description of this spaceship is, again, I'm building a lot from the, like, how the Decade universe, like, built their ship. But basically there is a, like, a Atlantean chair in the ship, which is where it can be piloted from. And so Anakin is the primary pilot, but anyone with an ATA gene can do it. And so, like, Anakin gets to do epic space battles and have a ton of fun, but, like, also much danger. But it's Anakin Skywalker. And so, now there are seven Wraith Hives on the way, and, like, basically what I was saying is that the Reliant could have basically taken the three Hives themselves, you know, with their gateships and X-Wings and that kind of thing. But seven Hives is a whole nother story, and Earth is definitely not prepared to deal with that, and... like, the Reliant really can't fight that many ships at once. It just can't. And so there's a mad scramble on Earth to, you know, pull together resources and allies and try and protect Earth. And they do succeed. Yay. Epic space battle, like, dramatic moments. One thing Decade does is that the Wraith darts make it to Earth. In this universe, they are able to bring, like, some of the, like, X-Wings and gateships came on the Reliant, but they're also able to dial into Atlantis and have, like, not the rest, because they don't want to leave, Atlantis unprotected, but, like, as many as they can spare to, Earth. And so between that and the F-302s or whatever they're called, that are like the spaceship space fighters that the SGC has developed, they're able to keep the darts away from most of the population. So in Decade, like, the Wraith darts do reach Earth, and, like, that blows the Stargate program wide open. We're going to assume, for purposes of, you know, keeping things real declassified, that, like, that the Earth and the Atlanteans create a perimeter that is decently far away from Earth. So there's, like, what looks like meteorites and, like, explosions in the sky, is spaceships, but, like, no one can fully prove that, and, like, the official line is, like, space shit is happening, and it's all, like, natural and nothing to panic about. So everything is remaining declassified. But now the battle is over, and the Atlanteans are now, like, needing to have a conversation with the SGC of, like, we now have time to debrief, and some of the tensions start to come out. They, like, started to come out in the gap between the two battles, but there kind of wasn't any time to deal with them because, like, life was on the line. Oh, another thing, which I forgot in my last recording of this, is that the Atlanteans use a different time system. One, the planet Atlantia has a 36-hour day, and so the Atlanteans are used to that. And then also, they use a metric time system, just because it makes way damn more sense. And so I did the math on this and posted it on Twitter the other day, with, like, some, what would be, like, the, like, ancient words for, like, day. There's hours, and then there's minutes and seconds, but, like, the conversion rate is more like there's 100 days in, you know, or there's 100 hours in a day, there's 100 minutes in an hour, there's 100 seconds in a minute, which ends up working out to, like, an hour is actually, like, like 20 minutes, and a minute is about 2 minutes, and a second is about 1.5 seconds. And so that is something that the Lantians used, and, like, actually the reason that I, like, decided to record this and get up at 6 in the morning. Anyway, like, not really all that important to the story, but it's a detail. So they're having this conversation between, like, the Atlantean expedition and the Lantians, because there's also non-expedition members here. Like, Ahsoka has come for the battle. She's a pretty decent pilot and, you know, was fighting. Didn't really get to use her lightsabers because it was very space-based. And Padme has come, like, as their, like, lead diplomat. Like, Obi-Wan stays in Atlantis, and basically Obi-Wan and Padme are the primary leaders of Lantia. And when they get there, they are having trouble, like, explaining what using an English word to describe what Obi-Wan and Padme are, because the ancient word is something that means more like organizer, protector, you know, like, leader, rather than, like, president. But, like, president is the, you know, most equivalent position. It just has different connotations. And, like, there are no executive branches, unfortunately. But it's working out in Lantia. We'll just say that. And so, basically, Padme and the rest of the Lantians knew that the clones were clones, because they all had the same face. So that was explained. But because the social divide is not there as much, except for as, like, internalized things, they aren't really aware of, like, the way the clones will be viewed on Earth. So Padme, Anakin, and Rex sit down and strategize of how, before they go down to the planet to try and, like, debrief. Like, they strategize how they're going to, like, talk and communicate with the SGC so that Rex isn't, like, devalued. Because, like, another thing they want to do while they're here, you know, as you do, is kind of start a clone revolution, because they want to be an example of how it is entirely possible to work with clones as equals, and, like, this works, and, like, encouraging the clones on Earth to have that power, getting them the gene fix, all that kind of stuff. So they're trying very hard to make sure that the SGC doesn't just, like, sweep Rex aside. So they each kind of have specific roles in the debrief, where Anakin is the scientist, Padme is, like, the leader of the Atlantis expedition, and Rex is the leader of the military commander. He's actually, the title is Supreme Commander, which is not a rank in the U.S. military. And so the SGC doesn't really like that. But, like, kind of one of the things they do is often the SGC will direct a question to Anakin specifically, because he is, like, the bioborn that they know. And Anakin will just look to Padme or Rex whenever it's, like, not, like, a scientific question. And then, like, if the SGC gets, like, nudgy about it and is like, well, what do you think, Anakin? Anakin will, like, give an opinion, but he makes sure that Rex and Padme are always given, like, priority in answering that question. And so, like, the Lantians are kind of having this debrief, and basically at some point the SGC kind of asks for a technology. Like, you know, is just like, tell us how to like recharge ZPMs, or, you know, like, you know, basically hand over all of your research that you've done over the past 10 years. And the Lantians feel pretty abandoned. They've been gone for 10 years and the SGC hasn't contacted them at all. And, like, in building their, like, world in Pegasus, they've done a lot of, like, diplomatic trade agreements and that kind of thing, and that's how they're used to sharing knowledge. They do share a lot of knowledge in Pegasus, but they do that by, you know, getting in trade spices and fabric and leather and, like, all of the metals, all the different things that they need. And so, you know, they have the same kind of approach to Earth. You know, like, they did come from here, but they're not just going to hand over everything that they've learned, like, without a buy your leave. And so that kind of comes to a head and attention. And, like, especially on the military side, like, Caldwell is, like, staring down Rex and is just like, you are a captain and a clone. And Rex is like, I'm a supreme commander of the Atlantean military. And, you know, they're kind of like head to head. But Padme, being the diplomat, like, tries to bring down the tension and is just like, you know, we are willing to trade. We are willing to, you know, we would like to reestablish contact for anyone who wants to talk to their families. Like, there are, you know, resources like coffee that we would really like, and that kind of thing. And so they're like, yeah, we'll trade for information, but, like, we're not just going to hand over 10 years worth of research. And the SGC really doesn't like that. And now they're kind of clued in to the fact that, like, the Lantians are ready to secede and are not recognizing the SGC authority. Like, Rex can't be court-martialed. He's just not going to be. If they try and detain him, the Lantians will take that as a kidnapping attempt and, like, or, like, him being held captive, and will launch a rescue accordingly.
Wait, no, even better. They do detain Rex and, like, maybe a few other clones who are down there. And, like, the Atlantis expedition goes, like, competently apeshit. And Ahsoka is the, like, leader of the, like, rescue team. And, like, the SGC hasn't seen lightsabers before, or Togrutas. And so, like, they very efficiently break into the SGC and, like, I mean, they try and, like, injure, like, the team members with Ahsoka have blasters, but, like, Ahsoka is extremely terrifying with her lightsabers, and there might be some, like, minor injuries, hopefully not decapitation, like, any, like, limb losing, but, you know, it's Star Wars. And, like, it's a universe where prosthetics are, like, actually, like, are very advanced and also very, like, accessible, for the advanced ones. And so they, like, get to Rex's cell, like, Ahsoka just, like, cuts through a wall casually, and they, like, get Rex and, like, get him back to the ship, and then, like, Anakin is just like, so, that, we're not gonna do that, thank you. I mean, no, that's not how Anakin would do that. He would be, like, fuming mad, and, like, maybe now has his lightsaber on him. I don't, I mean, that would be so extra, which is something Anakin Skywalker would do, and he would just be like, this is not how this is going to work, you know, and, like, we consider this, like, I don't know if he would say, like, an act of war, but, like, a, like, very serious offense against our people. And the SGC is just, like, I don't even know what they, how they respond, but, like, they still want their technology, and also they're very scared of them, and their lightsabers, and their competence. And so, like, the SGC really doesn't know what to do, and, like, they're now finding out that, like, the Lantians want to secede, and they're just like, but Padme is telling them that, and they're just kind of like, we don't really believe you. So they dial back to Atlantis and start to talk to Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan is like, yes, that's exactly what we want. And, like, it's been signed. It's just true. And the SGC is like, well, shit. But one of the key things that the Atlantean expedition does want to, not so much trade, but give freely, is the gene fix for the clones. They want to get that information out to all of the clones in the world. And the SGC is kind of like, we'll take this information and we might do it for, you know, the clones and the SGC. And the Lantians are just like, yeah, that ain't gonna cut it. Like, Kix is just like, no. If you don't, like, release this information to the world, I will. And that's what they end up doing, is, like, they're just like, you know, they sort of, they might, like, negotiate a little bit of, like, just to kind of be on better terms with Earth, where, like, you know, we will give you this information that you want if you make sure to get this information out. But alternately, like, they were 100% prepared to just, like, go throw this on the internet and tell as many people as they could and, you know, make sure it was, that information was out there and, like, the gene fix could be manufactured. And, I mean, I think this is, like, kind of where we end. Like, there's, oh, wait, no, we have an important thing to do. So, like, they do manage to negotiate for, like, reconnection with family. And, like, this is primarily a thing that Anakin is interested in, because he still feels very close to his mother, although he hasn't talked to her in 10 years, and she's thought he was dead for about 7, I think. And, like, there are some clones who want to reconnect with their brothers, but a lot of the clones who went together were, you know, already, like, batchmates and, like, team members. But some of them do want to reconnect and, like, also connect with new brothers, because there's still, like, a very solid feeling of solidarity. And so Anakin does get to see Smee again. When Anakin was in school, he started making money as a scientist, he helped his mom move out of, like, the trailer parks that they had been living in as migrant workers. And, you know, he gets her an apartment in the city, and she's still, like, employed as, like, an unskilled worker. There's lots of quotes here. But, you know, she's now, like, in the city, partially supporting herself. Anakin's money is partially supporting her. It does end after Anakin is declared dead, but, like, she does get, like, severance pay? Grief pay? I don't know. Whatever the, like, sorry we killed your son money is. And so she's still, like, living in the city, like, has been saving money for a long time, and is, like, still doing all right. But now they get to call her up, and Anakin gets to be like, hey, Mom, I'm alive. And it's very emotional, and I love it. And
So, one of the things is before Anakin left, he didn't exactly spill the beans, but he very strongly hinted, because he is not very good at being subtle. He thinks he is, but he is not. He had kind of told her that he was going on a mission where he would get to fly a lot. And, you know, that was really cool. And also simultaneously talking about space. Shmi put that together that somehow Anakin was getting to fly spaceships and was ecstatic. And she was very happy for her son. And, like, also understood how that could be very dangerous. She's very happy to be reconnected with her son. Again, no one in the Atlantean expedition is respecting NDAs and classification. They're just like, in talking to friends, they're just like, this is a thing, if you didn't know. Anakin tells Shmi all about Atlantis and the struggles that they've had and the, like, successes that they have, and, you know, is like, you know, I don't want to be separated from you. If you want, please move to Atlantis. Like, I will still stay in contact with you if you want to stay on Earth, but if you want to come, like, you can come. And Shmi is like, hells yes. And I think when Shmi gets to Atlantis, like, she is older, but she now starts to be able to, like, focus more on education, because there isn't, like, you know, really wages in, like, there isn't, I mean, I guess there's capitalism, but it's, like, trade capitalism, and, like, the Atlanteans make sure everyone has food and shelter and that kind of thing. Like, that's just something everyone gets as being a part of that society. Shmi joins this, the Atlanteans, and, like, now is able to focus more on her education and, like, learn more about science and, you know, all these things that Anakin knows and, like, engineering and stuff. And that's really exciting for her. She'd done some of that back on Earth. Like, she'd taken some community college classes and, like, you know, maybe she worked at, like, a mechanic shop and, like, had been, like, learning a trade. But it's really cool for her to be able to expand her education. And also be near her son and, like, his adopted little sister of Ahsoka, who she loves. And, you know, it's just nice, happy family times. I did say we were going to get to an OT3. And this definitely happened, like, way before the, like, returning to Earth. But, both Anakin and Padme really like Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan really likes them, but also it's a platonic thing, or a romantic thing. Obi-Wan is asexual. Obi-Wan is in a relationship with Anakin and Padme, and kind of, but also in a romantic relationship with Cody. And because they have become very close over the expedition. And so the way that this ends up working is they find a room in Atlantis that, like, is kind of a suite where there's two bedrooms. Obi-Wan just kind of hops back and forth, between the beds, like, as, like, whoever is there for cuddles, he will crawl into their bed. And then, like, sometimes, like, when he hasn't cuddled one for a while, will, like, you know, go to that bed. But they are very happy poly people. Like, that kind of thing is a lot more accepted in Pegasus. Like, especially, like, the asexuality stuff is, like, Obi-Wan, like, had struggled with, like, you know, internalized homophobia, and also, like, really didn't know about asexuality, and that, like, this was a thing that was perfectly fine. But, like, in conversations with Tayla and Padme and, like, other people in other Pegasus natives, he finds out that, like, this is a thing that, like, everyone here thinks is totally normal and won't judge you for. And so Obi-Wan is a little repressed, but he starts to be able to unpack that and really love all of these partners in his life. And so, yeah, so that is the happy ending for the OT3 and also, Obi-Wan and Cody. Rex and Ahsoka also, I think, have a thing, but definitely not until she's, like, she was, by the time they're, like, Rex would be, like, Rex and Ahsoka are actually fairly close in age. Like, Rex is probably in his 21 at the beginning of the expedition, and then, like, you know, 31 by the end, and Ahsoka is, like, 27. Like, Ahsoka might be a little bit younger than that because they didn't find her right away. Yeah, so that's kind of the happy endings for our characters. Obi-Wan gets to kind of continue being, like, an organizer and leader and diplomat, but also, like, as they defeat the Wraith, because they definitely completely defeat the Wraith, because fuck that. You know, also another aspect to the, like, conversion therapy is, like, maybe if we cannot genocide, let's not genocide. Because what's a Star Wars story without some genocide in it? God fucking damn it. Anyway, Obi-Wan is able to, like, kind of do more of his, like, anthropology kind of stuff and, like, talk more with the Ethosians and the Naboo and Ronin and really get to know these different cultures in Pegasus. And there's just a lot of cultural exchange that has happened over the course of 10 years. Like, there's a lot of, like, intermarriage and interrelationships. There's, you know, like, language passing back and forth, traditions passing back and forth. And just, like, this is part of the reason that none of the Lantians want to stay on Earth full time, because they have connections and community and culture that would be completely removed if they returned to Earth. So that is the happily ever after of Atlanteans and Pegasus. They, like, hang out there and, like, sometimes help out Earth when they're in deep shit. But, like, are their own thing. Like, the SGC is kind of freaked out. They do trade for some information with the Atlanteans, but they're also, like, really terrified that, like, this expedition that they sent out created, a larger army than they sent them with and, like, could probably destroy them if they wanted to. And they're not so confident that they would never want to. And it freaks them out. Also, the, like, clone revolution civil rights is successful on Earth, because that also is a happy ending that we need. You know what would be even better than, like, just there being a clone revolution on Earth is that there is a clone migration to Pegasus. So, I don't know exactly how this would work, but I, like, have this feeling that there is, like, a network of clones or, like, a, like, internet server that is only accessible to all of the clones. And so basically they send out a blast and are like, so, space travel, it's a thing. We have been living in another galaxy for 10 years. We don't treat clones like shit. If you want to have a different job, you totally can. Like, if you want to move, let us know. We'll bring you up to our spaceship, or through the Stargate. And, like, the SGC isn't wild about that, because it doesn't quite blow, like, I mean, it blows the declassification, it it blows the classification for, like, the clones, but it isn't readily accessible by, like, bioborn humans, but, like, some stuff leaks through, and, like, there is a very noticeable, like, sudden disappearance of, like, a significant number of the clones, if not all of them. And so, yeah, like, I mean, that's a challenge, because, like, literally, there ends up being, like, millions of them. Like, I'm not sure how many clones Earth would make, because, like, they're not being used for a space war. Like, I think they are in, like, some Earth wars and, like, that kind of thing, but they aren't, like, in a galaxy-wide battle. But there would be a lot of them, probably more than, like, the Lantia planet can, support. So there probably is also just, like, oh, this is what happens. So then they, like, find another habitable planet with a, like, a Stargate, and then, like, and then that planet is named Mandalore, and then we have the Mandalorian culture of family and, like, bounty hunting, and, you know, and, like, the clones get to, like, you know, shift around their jobs, and some of them, like, start farming, and some of them, like, still are on, like, military-type protection, and some of them are, like, studying science that didn't get to do that before, and stuff like that. And Atlantis is, like, very instrumental in getting them, like, set up, making sure they have, like, they need to bring a not insignificant amount of food with them to, like, support the time between when they get there and, like, the amount of food that, like, the Atlanteans can give them, because, like, they've been growing for themselves and some surplus, but not, like, a million people of surplus. So until the clones can get, like, their, like, food system up and running and, like, get into, like, the spice trade, which is not, like, Star Wars spice, just, like, spices. They, like, need to bring from Earth, like, a significant number of probably, like, MREs and ration packs. But they are able to found Mandalore. And, like, another thing is that I don't know how much, like, clone armor has been a thing. Like, that would probably primarily be a thing for the clones in the military. But, like, now that they've moved to Mandalore, they can, like, grow that culture and, like, have, like, colorful markings to represent, like, their people and themselves. And yeah, so there's also happy endings for all of the clones. Yay! And yeah, so that is, like, Star Wars and Pegasus and their journey and happily ever after. Thank you for listening. Yeah, this is something that I've been writing in my head to try and, like, go to sleep at night, and I figured I could share it with you guys, because it's not that hard to record oral nutfic, even if you have to do it twice. All right, thank you for listening.